The Bible is replete with tough texts. We cannot avoid them, but we can preach from them. Here in the season of Lent, we are committed to see our sin and to see its consequences. In our sermons this year, we are attending especially to sins which we bear collectively, rather than those of a more personal nature. And so here we also find ourselves in another season, that being Women's History Month. By its very existence, such a celebration as Women's History Month must refer our thought to the context which gave rise to it, namely that men have so long constructed history as their own work, and women they have constructed as critical, primarily to supply the children without which history is impossible to make. And men have so mismeasured the reality and power of women through the ages, and yet the ground of their sin, our sin, men's sin of history making, the ground has been so turned by the power of time, by the plow of development, that we, I'm referring to men, that we agree that her story in history should receive a special month, really, along with many other changes. So first we must deal with Timothy. A brief Bible study aside, I am persuaded thoroughly by those scholars who say there is no basis to think that this letter is from the Apostle Paul. That is the tradition, but that it is written by another learner, not by Paul. We need to deal with Timothy. I'm going to call him Timothy for the moment. We need to deal with sit down and shut up Timothy, with make babies Timothy. He's still here. I don't so much mean in you and your behavior, but we are taking on the unity of our sinfulness as a society, and he's still here. You've probably read about efforts in Washington, D.C., the lawmakers there wishing to remove all federal financial support for the Planned Parenthood organization. They say, those lawmakers, that the federal funds ought not support abortions, and citizens should be protected from having their monies used against their will. But everybody knows that only 3% of Planned Parenthood activities and funds are used in matters pertaining to abortions. On the other hand, 97% of the work of that organization is literally the doctor and the counselor for millions of women in this nation. As Nancy Gibbs wrote recently in Time magazine, those lawmakers' moves against Planned Parenthood are just payback. It is, her words, prejudice dressed up as principle. For principled lawmakers would disclose that the funding cut will end family planning for millions of women. Principled men would be troubled by the risk that these cuts would increase the numbers of abortions in our land. Principled lawmakers would understand that after the demise planned for Planned Parenthood, men of principle, they would stand up to fund the cities and the states in support of the tens upon tens of thousands of children born to poorer and less well-educated people, women, who could not find their way to a clinic like Planned Parenthood. But we do not live in a society that requires honesty of its legislators like that. The word in our society is, she'll be saved through childbearing, right? It's in the book. And so the Bible is abused from generation to generation. In February, a huge public outcry turned back an initiative by these same lawmakers in that city to redefine rape and incest. Did you follow that? In a bill to reauthorize Medicaid funding of abortions in cases of rape or incest, these lawmakers inserted two qualifiers. The only rape that would be eligible for Medicaid funding would be forcible rape. Was there any other kind? The only incest incidents leading to a pregnancy which would now help fund an abortion would be those with minors. Well, once you're 16, honey, you'll be saved through childbearing of your brother. In Florida, lawmakers like these plan today to make every woman who seeks an abortion view an ultrasound image of her own body. In Ohio, legislators have caused recently two fetuses to testify on the floor of the legislature by piping in the sound of beating hearts as they undertake to cause the legislature to pass legislation like that in Florida. In South Dakota, women will be made to wait 3 days for an abortion. Oh, really, 3 days? Did these men suppose the women had not already turned their decision over for weeks? Oh, yes, but not under the watchful eye of men. What is going on here? It's all over the country. It infects everything. None of these assaults on the rights of women aim seriously to reduce abortions. Rather, they assault women. They frame women as irresponsible moral agents, women who need guardians to make sure that their decisions fit with the men's authority. That the women must sit down and shut up and be silent. These plans are not policy, they are theater. They are the theater of oppression. And this is sin. It is sin. It is sin so to distrust the presence of the image of God, male and female made, as to withhold from women the dignity and powers inherent to human being. More than a generation ago, biblical scholar Phyllis Trible demonstrated that in the ancient word from Genesis, which we heard this morning, God's differentiation of the two sexes has not to do with procreation. That's not what it says. It has to do with God's desire that God's image shine forth in creation through the human male and female. The original unity, I'm quoting, the original unity in humanity is at one and the same time the original differentiation. Therefore, to send women back to the birthing bed, back to the hearth, this contravenes the full sense of the opening words of the Bible. Now let us hear briefly a word from Paul from another context. For freedom Christ has set you free. Do not then again submit to a yoke of slavery. Not slavery to biology, not slavery to human masters. Do not submit again to that yoke of slavery which has kept women from emerging in the public sphere as male and female together. So we confess this sin as our history, as ours. And we ask, how did we get here? To understand this, you have to make a choice between accepting the reality of evolutionary process or interpreting Adam and Eve as historical. You cannot continue to go between these two. I don't know who of you might be, but it's impossible. In our nation, we get pollsters showing us that something like 50 or 60% of the people say, sure, I believe in Adam and Eve as literally so. And yet they'll go and turn to their doctors and others, relying on sciences to help them through what is real. There's a schizophrenia in our society of miseducation and ignorance. To understand how we got here, one must make a choice between evolutionary process and a literal reading of Adam and Eve. If you decide for evolution, you get a story of such mystery and power, you need a divine author for it. You might actually see with us one vision over all of this extraordinary history, for the brevity of humanity's sojourn on Earth appalls the most casual glance. Think of this. Through hundreds of millions of years, let's just pause with that. Think about this. Through hundreds of millions of years, great powerful lizards roamed everywhere across this globe, maybe right here on Manhattan Island, for hundreds of millions of years. And then in the blink of an eye, humanity has stood up through about 30,000 years, not more, has formed its notion of its groups and communities and civilizations, and has come to believe our dominion is permanent. Permanent. After 30,000 years at the very outside. It's only in the last 10,000 years or so that this creature organized stable communities and began to record its awareness of existence. And during this sliver of time, while the human physiology did not change in any respect at all, consciousness underwent a tornado of development. Evolution has undergone a revolution inside this bony vessel. And only during the last 2,000 or 3,000 years did humans finally take hold of their experience of being as a being in relation with one another. Karen Armstrong, along with other historians, calls the time between 800 BC and the Common Era the Axial Age. For all across the historical world during that period, it is as if the human creature suddenly, 800 years, suddenly turned on an axle to transcend biology and give birth to an awareness for the self, for the other, for the divine other, emerging in Confucianism, in Buddhism, through Hinduism, in Judaism, in the great development of Greece and Christianity. So this is how we got here. By waking up just yesterday from our animal sleep. It is the most adequate hypothesis. Genesis 1, male and female created together in the image of God, was written in the thrill, about 500 BC, in the thrill of the turning of this axle of awareness, of a new possibility. Now, how is it that this could have come to a mind 2,500 years ago. Sometimes the Spirit of God leads a soul ahead of her times, ahead of his times, to see and to receive light revealed through a tiny crack to show God's future. This is how we can understand the untimely, holy wisdom of Genesis 1. And so, regarded developmentally, we come to Timothy as a contradiction, as a pulling back from the light that had been shown. We come to Timothy as a contradiction, a natural reaction, you could say, a blinded by the light. I don't want to go forward, God. Stop. Shut up. Sit down. You remember, well, only if you really had a baby to regard, do you remember the pain of waking up. That bewilderment as an infant comes in to an afternoon's light and seems for a moment to despise it. We're all like that. Humans are just barely waking up out of billions of years of sleep. So let us remember this too, though. Civilization required agriculture to get up on its feet. I won't explain further. You probably know this. Agriculture, like the era of hunting that preceded it, required the physical strength of men to pull behind a horse-drawn plow and break the hard earth and earn the bread by which all lived. The strength of men still mattered for centuries, centuries after the Common Era began. Therefore, we should think that men and women continued to rock together in the biological framework that had been delivered to them by all the animals since forever, that the stronger creature ordered the hierarchies and powers and values of the social system of the creature. But here's a fact of unusual, it startles me. Just a few decades after new farm technology rendered physical strength irrelevant to the production of agriculture, the women's movement began in earnest. This tight relationship of these things of body and mind must not be ignored. It was in 1792 that Mary Wollstonecraft wrote the book, The Vindication of the Rights of Women. And there has been no turning back since. You might think of the image of God in male and female as like a crouching tiger of light, just waiting for a clear path to express the transcendence that is coming through. But if you decide against evolution in favor of a literal Adam and Eve, you get some treasures, maybe. You get to deny this whole account of development that I have just offered. You get to deny that we have any animal nature at all. You get to deny that it is slowly giving way to the gift of God. You get to keep Timothy. You get to claim that Adam was not deceived. Adam was not deceived, you could say. But the woman was deceived, you could say. She became the transgressor, you could say, if you want to keep all that. Friends, let us regard such denial for what it is. It is sin. Sin. It is sin to refuse to receive the Spirit of God or to see by the light of God when the light has been presented to you. and to do so in order to preserve in shadows and sorrow and violence the power and privilege that belongs to the animals. It would be as if we had not been called beyond ourselves into a transcendence of our nature. That is what is at stake in deciding between evolutionary process and the literal story of Adam and Eve. 25 years ago, about 100 miles north of here, I was serving in my first church, and I met a curious behavior among members of the governing board. When a matter would come to the table of some disagreement, some of the men would get extremely angry, though no offense had been given, but extremely angry over the issue. And after just a bit, some of the women would start to cry. I thought of it as like one of these control rods in a nuclear reactor. Put in the crying, and the men, being manly, would want to soothe the women in their crying, and so you can't be manly and soothing at the same time that you're angry. So the anger would come down, and it worked like a machine. This went on two or three times, and then one night I named it. I told them it was a racket. I said, in what's going on here is the men get their way, which is public action, they're so accustomed to, by using power through anger. And the women get their way, which is peace in the group, through tears. And I proposed that their behavior was probably familiar, that is, learned in the family. And I said it belonged to a different age of humanity than we are in. And guess what? That behavior actually disappeared immediately from that organization. It only required a naming at that conference table. Just a little outside light shining into the darkness helped those individuals leave behind, at least in public, a vestige of ancient animal behavior where brute strength dominates until a submissive cry is offered. The crouching tiger of God's light leapt up, and they accepted my judgment. The agency of women emerged in that church. The image of God showed up more brightly. They got healthier. The contemporary philosopher Ken Wilber has written about these processes. He said that the real cause of resistance to today's feminism is a resistance to the emergence of an entirely novel structure of consciousness, a structure that is now in the process of integrating both women and men into an utterly new world space. That is what is feared, and that is what is resisted. Well, he's got it. But we might stand dumbstruck to see that 2,500 years ago, someone else got it and said it in just about the same words that Mr. Wilber seems to have found. The author of Genesis 1 pointed with poetic perfection toward that new structure of consciousness integrating both women and men into an utterly new world space. Therefore, with firm conviction, let us see that many, perhaps most, of those who resist all family planning stratagems, those who try to refuse to women the rights of decision about their bodies, these people are reacting against the loss of an ancient structure of power of which they are all but dimly aware. Their laws Their strictures not only have no positive effect on the claimed outcomes, reducing abortions, but actually positively retard human development toward justice and light, including retarding development toward more just relations between men and women. The only real change that can lead us toward fewer abortions. In her masterwork on this subject, written about 30 years ago already, Beverly Harrison wrote, "Far from being a matter of social indifference or a private affair, procreative choice will alter the dynamics of social power considerably." Our opponents know this, and it is the reason they fight us. Some women, too, find the idea of appropriating our rightful social power threatening. So conditioned have these women become to social powerlessness. But with social power comes a necessary social responsibility. Only a feminist agenda for social justice for women can hold out any hope of reducing the need for abortions in this society. To see our sin together, that is to say, not to make devils of those who are on the other side, but not to refrain from judgment, from decisions, discernments. To see our sin together is always truly breathtaking. You know? Breathtaking. But God, Holy Spirit, is ever ready to give breath back to those from whom the sight of ourselves has taken breath, those who are afflicted by the brightness of the light. Thus, in the gift of God, we are drawn upward from our miseries into new powers of seeing. You know, every single human being from babyhood onward starts through this process the same way. Every little baby is a structure of animal need. That's it. And every young child is being brought up to see or not see the possibilities of the light, of the image of God. We all begin in such darkness. And so God is calling forth from us more capacity for compassion and more capacity to see the sorrows and to act, to see how we ourselves have dimmed the image of God's light. You know you are called into this turning, for the axle of transformation continues to turn. No longer are you egocentric. No longer centered on your tribe, whether of color or class or creed. No more focused on your nation as your first citizenship. No more androcentric or anthropocentric, but turning ever toward the image of God, which has been revealed. Male and female. We open this service today singing, "Thou hidden fount of love, of peace and truth and beauty, inspire us from above with joy and strength for duty. May thy fresh light arise within each clouded heart and give us open eyes to see thee as thou art, male and female, created God them." Amen.